Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Democrats and some Republicans are voicing concerns about President Trump's proposed military parade and feel the event may come off as totalitarian. You think? That's like someone being worried that the Pride Parade is gonna come off as a little bit gay. That's what they were going for.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to actress Ann Dowd. Then, exclusively for this podcast, Ann keeps the conversation going backstage at Studio 8G. But first, a closer look.
President Trump's former confidant Omarosa released yet another secret tape today as Trump's legal team threatened the special counsel in the Russia investigation. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. As the Russia probe intensifies, Trump's legal team is getting more desperate. This week, his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, openly threatened special counsel Robert Mueller and warned him to end his investigation soon. Giuliani told Bloomberg News, if he doesn't get it done in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we will just unload on him like a ton of bricks. Oh, Rudy. You weird old mid-November jack-o'-lantern. You really think you're gonna scare Robert Mueller? That guy eats bricks like they're Cliff Bars. Who are you gonna bet on in a showdown between a former Marine and an elderly lawyer who looks like a half-finished Bitmoji? You know what Rudy reminds me of? You know when you go to a McDonald's and there are a bunch of teenagers working there, of course, but then there's one old guy and you're like, oh, that's gotta be a sad story. Except the sad story here is that guy used to be the mayor of New York City. Rudy's threats shouldn't surprise us. Trump and his inner circle will go to virtually any lengths to silence or bully their critics. Just yesterday, for example, the White House revoked the security clearance of former CIA director John Brennan, who's been an outspoken critic of Trump. Now, you don't have to like Brennan to see what's going on here. Trump's trying to silence him, and Republicans are fully on board, like Louisiana Senator John Kennedy, who used a very childish insult for Brennan.
I think most Americans look at our national intelligence experts as being above politics. Mr. Brennan has demonstrated that that's not the case. He's been totally political. I think I called him a butthead, and I meant it.
Oh, did you? You called him a butthead and meant it. And furthermore, let the record show that I rule and Brennan drools. Senators should not be calling people buttheads. Especially since you all look like old Beavis. And then, of course, there's Trump's ongoing feud with his former confidant, Omarosa Manigault Newman. Trump is apparently so freaked out by Omarosa's secret tapes that now he wants Omarosa in jail. Vanity Fair reported today that Trump told advisors he wants Attorney General Jeff Sessions to have Manigault Newman arrested. It's unclear what law Trump believes she broke. You think you can arrest Omarosa? This is a person you tried to fire 4 times, and you still can't get rid of her. If you threw Omarosa in jail, she would tunnel her way out with a spoon Shawshank style. And then, when you woke up the next morning, she's gonna be standing over your bed with a copy of the Russian pee tape. But this isn't.
I make copies.
This isn't the first time Trump's tried to silence Omarosa. After she was fired from the White House, the Trump team tried a tactic with her that they've tried with several former Trump aides, giving her a job on the campaign to keep her quiet. Remember, this is a person who Trump has called wacky, deranged, vicious, and not smart. But apparently he wanted to hire her a fifth time.
Manigault Newman says she was subsequently offered a $15,000 a month job on the Trump campaign that would, of course, require that she keep quiet about her time in the Trump administration.
You're a crazy lowlife who can't be trusted. Welcome aboard.
Omarosa was offered the job. She was offered the job on the campaign by Lara Trump, Eric Trump's wife, who's an official with the Trump campaign. Omarosa says she took it as an attempt to buy her silence. And once again, she had a secret tape to back up her story. This was a conversation Omarosa had with Lara Trump shortly after being fired from the White House.
It sounds a little like, obviously, that there's something you've got in the back pocket to pull out. Clearly, if you come over at the campaign, like, we can't have it. We gotta...
Oh, God, no.
Everybody's positive, right? So I know you were making 179 at the White House, and I think we could work something out where we keep you right along those lines. Specifically, let me see, I haven't even added up the numbers, but we were talking about like $15K a month. Let me see what that adds up to. 12. Yeah, so that's 180,000. Does that sound like a fair deal for you?
Maybe next time you're offering someone hush money to keep them quiet, do the math before you get on the phone. So let's see, $15K a month times 12, let's see. And we're going to carry the one. That's $180,000 a year, plus, of course, $5.99 for a roll of duct tape. So first they hired Omarosa, then they fired her, then they tried to hire her again to buy her off. This is how Trumpism works. Everyone is conning everyone else. And in the process, they're conning the rest of us, too. In fact, Trump's favorite TV show, Fox and Friends, basically admitted as much yesterday when, in a rare moment of honesty, they said that Omarosa had outplayed Trump.
The other big story yesterday was what's going on with Omarosa. In order to sell a book, she's come out with a series of tapes and in many ways seems to have outsmarted the president who's taken the bait and gone out and tweeted directly after her.
Wow. That's Trump's favorite TV show. That's the show he watches every morning to feel better about himself. That's like if you put on a meditation tape and it said, "You're sitting by a mountain stream. Birds are singing. Every day that passes, you're closer to death." But that's such a revealing clip because there's no better vessel of modern conservatism than Fox and Friends. And even they're telling you that it's all just a giant grift. Omarosa is playing Trump. Trump is playing the rest of us. And Rudy Giuliani is just a
butthead.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is an Emmy Award-winning actress you know from her work on HBO's The Leftovers and films such as Compliance and Captain Fantastic. She stars as Aunt Lydia in Hulu's spectacular series The Handmaid's Tale. Please welcome to the show, Ann Dowd, everyone! I'm so, so happy you're here!
Well, I feel the need to apologize after that thing I just saw.
What happened?
Well, that woman.
Oh, yeah, no, it is true. Aunt Lydia is an interesting cat. She's a very, but yet, you know, obviously this is a character who, many layered character, but a character that I don't think a lot of people root for. Yet, is she fun to play? Is it a character that you find the fun in?
It's the best thing ever.
Yeah. That's great.
I'm sorry if that's offensive, but it's just heaven.
That's great.
Because at the end of the day, you know, we go home and everyone has the eye.
Uh-huh.
And the fingers are all there.
Right, of course.
Cattle prod is not working out. So, yeah, it's wonderful.
And you won an Emmy for this role last year, deservedly so. So fantastic.
Thank you.
I genuinely mean this. I was at the show. We didn't win, and that was very self-centeredly. That's all I cared about. And you won, and I really had a moment like, no, I'm really happy for her. She really deserves it.
That's
so thank you
kind.
For giving me that.
Anytime.
Yeah, of course.
Happy to oblige.
Fingers crossed it happens again. So,
thank you.
And so are you, you've won one, you get to go back. Do you feel different about it now? Do you feel more relaxed because of last year?
No.
Okay,
no,
good.
No. Terror and anxiety, and I remind myself, stop your nonsense.
You're
lucky to play the role, and deep breath, and like that.
Gotcha. How often, because I think this is very healthy for people to hear, as an accomplished actor, how often do you have to say stop the nonsense? Because I feel like I have to say it to myself constantly.
Well, the wonderful thing about work is that it requires focus, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's true.
And it's a challenging series, and you have to just get down to business. I'm not 22, so I'm accustomed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I want to ask about the Aunt Lydia reference heard around the world. Our own Michelle Wolf used to be a writer here. She did this incredible job at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. She made a joke where she compared Sarah Huckabee Sanders to Aunt Lydia. Where were you when you heard that, and what was your reaction to it?
Well, I have to say, I was in Australia, and I had just been there a minute and a half, and I was deep in jet lag. So I literally turned the television on for companionship, as one does in loneliness. And I heard, it was just before Michelle Wolf said this about Lydia. I loved you in The Handmaid's Tale or whatever. I said, wait a second, I'm playing Lydia. What's going on? I was confused. And then I thought, oh, this is an SNL skit. I really thought that because I said, no one could sit there and listen to that.
Yeah.
And stay in their seat.
Yeah, no.
Do you know what I'm saying? And then I thought, who has the bravery to say those things, number one? And then I thought, yeah, and snap out of it. Put it together. This is real. And then I thought, Aunt Lydia would make mincemeat of you, Missy.
Oh.
Sanders. And she would have Trump forgive me. Not forgive me. Hello. I went to church for a minute. But, I mean, she'd have him in that chair from season one in the middle of the circle.
Oh, you think she would
and
put
she
him...
would have him figured out narcissism is her least favorite sin.
Right, right.
And she does have some compassion for mental illness, but not a lot.
Yeah.
And so patience. She would have yeah, she would have taken care of business immediately. And
oh, yeah, that's so weird. Basically, what I you're believe. Saying is we would, in the end, be good... in a situation where Aunt Lydia was working at the White House right now, that would be a positive.
It would be helpful, but she wouldn't do it because she has no patience for nonsense.
That's true.
See what I'm saying?
Very inefficient place.
She would have said, no, who's it? No, not working up.
I love the idea. I think the craziest thing that could happen to anyone when they fly to Australia is to be jet lagged and immediately turn on the TV and hear a reference to someone you play on TV.
And then I thought to my, and I literally the confusion, but wait a minute, I think I'm playing. I literally took a minute.
Did you call your agent and say, how did you not let me know about this? Sarah Huckabee Sanders is playing my part?
And someone, yeah. And someone should have taken her aside and said, you're going to be ripped to shreds. So whenever they start, just laugh as loud as you can.
Yes, there was I actually think her plan was don't laugh at all because I think laughing was not her goal. Oh. Laughing made it look like it was a fun night and we're all coming together.
Yeah,
and I don't think
enough.
Coming together is what they're trying to
right.
get
because
out
there. Because they are the enemy of the people.
Yeah, so no. you want to, and then anytime you can sit there stone-faced and I think illustrate this enemy of the people idea, that's just, they love that. So I want to ask this. The scene we showed, that was at Fenway Park. It wasn't actually at Fenway
right,
Park, but
right.
it takes place in Fenway Park. What was it like? Because you grew up in New England. You're a
I
sports
did.
Fan.
Yes.
How did it feel to, basically shoot in the most depressing Fenway Park? And I've been there on pretty depressing days, but that looked...
No, yeah, that takes it... I mean, if ever there is an image that says, this is the world we live in, it's the overgrown mound, the pitcher's mound.
Yeah.
And it just was terrible, eerie. And plus, it was 5 a.m. when I crossed that, just before the sun came up. And we'd been there all night, and it was raining and freezing cold, and walking over that mound. And then I thought, you can't complain because those handmaids... are at death's door.
Yeah.
And they're standing on those ledges and they're so cold they could weep and they're not complaining. So it was quite a night, I have to say.
You are a huge New England Patriots fan.
Yes.
Which in my book, and I am a fan of yours, makes you more evil than Aunt Lydia.
What were you? What do you like?
Well, here's the thing. I grew up in New England. I'm saying this fully out of jealousy of the Patriots.
Yeah.
I'm just jealous. It comes from a petty place. My dad's from Pittsburgh. I'm a Steelers fan. So it's been a rough...
Oh, I see.
It's been a rough decade or so.
I've got yeah. it. I understand.
And are you... I hear you're so intense that your children don't like to be there when you're watching.
Can I just say this to begin? I don't get the rules of football.
Okay.
You know how it is? I think you have to kind of play it to get the subtleties and all. I get when they throw it and you catch it and you run and you go through the, right? And you,
I mean, it seems like you're
and
an expert.
There's points. because I suppressed it all of my growing up years, because it's all that, if football was on, there was no other option. And I thought, this is the most ridiculous nonsense. Somehow when I hit 40, this bizarre beast came flying out. And I scream, and I get hysterical. My children just quietly get up, and they depart.
That's so funny.
And they say to my husband, when it's over, could you let us know? And I'll... I don't know what happens, do you know?
Yeah, my family's very much like that. We say about our mom, because she's a huge Steelers fan now, too, that you explain the rules of football to her every play, and then when a whistle's blown, she forgets it all. So each play, you have to start over. It's like 50 first dates with my mom in football.
That's very funny.
Now, you actually you had another incredible character, Patty Levin, on The Leftovers, which was another incredible show.
Love
and you. You played a cult leader.
Yep.
And she was inspired by Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick. Which I'm sure he's not amused by that in any way.
Here's the good news. He's not amused by anything.
And I'm sure he doesn't care, mind you.
Yeah, no, he doesn't, yeah.
But the thing is, it was three episodes in, and I said, who is this person that I'm playing? I'm familiar with this person. I couldn't figure out what it was, and then I thought, oh, it's Bill Belichick. It was the sweatshirt. Hey, let's get real.
Yeah, there you go. I think that you look, and you're like, yeah, there you go.
It's so flattering. I mean, I'm embarrassed. And look at the look. But it's also the look there, amazing, and also he doesn't care one whit what anyone thinks.
Yeah.
And she didn't care particularly either. And so I thought, wow, that'll work.
Yeah, it's a combination of effectiveness, which you have to be if you're either running the Patriots or a cult, and both an effectiveness and not caring what anybody thinks. So I think that was a very nice inspiration. I tip my cap to your choice.
Well, thank
Best
you.
Best of luck at the Emmys. It's just absolutely
thank
lovely
you.
Having you here.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So much. Thank you.
And now, everybody, the second season of The Handmaid's Tale is streaming in its entire, exclusively on Hulu.
Hi, everyone. This is Sarah from Late Night. I am backstage here with Ann Dowd and one of our writers, Seth Reese.
Yes, and I think a lot of people would wonder why I would get to sit next to a very famous actress. But it's happened before. Ann Dowd and I are good friends, and we shouldn't be.
No, we don't like each other,
We don't like each other. We hate each other.
That's it.
She's
No. Well, yeah, all right.
Well, there are two words that I've often used to describe Ann Dowd. Awful human.
And awful human.
Awful human. But,
do you know what I'm saying?
But here's the thing. We're able to talk like this because a year ago, pretty much a year ago from the Emmys.
The day after the Emmys.
The day after the Emmys, you had won, right? You won.
Yeah, honey, I remember.
Yeah, you won. You said you had a great speech. Hulu, that was you. That was you. And then we were nominated for writing. And so we were flying back to New York and you were on our flight and we didn't know each other. And you were seated next to me and you had won. And I don't talk to people on planes. Do you talk to people on planes?
Yes, I'm a cordial human being. You are not. You know, we're all humans in the world.
I wonder if you talk to people less on planes after your experience meeting Seth.
Well,
Reese.
I don't sit next to people on planes. I just make it it's part of the contract. Can't do it.
You just go right to the wing.
The dangers, I didn't know how,
right, how bad it can be.
So you learned a valuable lesson.
I learned such a lesson.
So, well, I don't usually talk to people on planes. And this is true. I am such a big fan of your work on The Leftovers.
He's never
said
a nice
thing
to me before, so I'm sitting here trying to keep my... Go ahead, honey.
And yeah. I had to say, I just want to say, congratulations, you're excellent. And then what happened after that?
So he said some nice things.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, it's going to be a long ride.
Where in terms of the flight had you just sat down?
I don't think we had taken off.
No.
Okay.
And then, you see, my husband, the dear man, was sitting in, I'm embarrassed to say... What do you call it?
Steerage.
Steerage. And so this Seth said, oh, did you want to sit next to your husband? I said, oh, you want to go sit in steerage? He said, oh, no. Took that back instantly. I said, uh-huh, true character, flying out, generous when it doesn't count. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No issues there. And then he said nice things. And then he said, you know, we don't have to talk or anything on the flight or anything. I said, I'm not talking to you. I wouldn't dream of it. I've got things to do. And then we talked for 5 hours.
We talked for 5 hours from takeoff to touchdown. Why I was so happy to be seated next to Anne is because, you know, like I'm enamored of excellent artists and actresses and actors who are really like, you can tell Anne that you're into your craft, you know? And I...
He's never been nice to me, so now I don't know what to do.
And I love that so much. So I was so thrilled... There was sort of an instant friend connection when we looked at each other, right? I think it was like we could tell that we were both funny human beings. And we immediately started giving each other
Yes.
Yes. And we really talked from takeoff to touchdown. And it was lovely. And one thing that's interesting, I think. People do talk to people on planes, right? That happens. But what makes it real is we exchange phone numbers.
But I think that some people, when you talk to somebody on a plane, there is that fear that you will get caught and you actually can't leave the conversation. So I think that is a hesitation for people.
And I told you things that were deeply personal.
Yeah.
That took an hour, and then suddenly it's like, I'm telling this man my life story, my concerns, my worries about my children, about things that are seriously important to me. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the ride, I thought, this is a dear friend of mine. I've never had that, I have to say.
And even though when she was saying those things to me, those deeply personal things, I was just laughing and laughing and laughing in her face.
You were actually nice.
Like, this is so pathetic. And, well, what's that?
You were nice. In fact, I'm sorry to compliment you sincerely.
Yeah.
Because I avoided it every opportunity. Mm-hmm. But you had that look in your eye, and I thought, he's actually listening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the end of that. I'm not ever saying that
so
again.
So you did exchange phone numbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then this began a friendship.
Then we started texting, like, mad.
And I was shocked because you sent the first text message, and it was so funny. Just these weird...
It was about your gym bag.
It was about my gym bag. And because there was, I had to use a Zipcar gym bag, and Anne hated that. And she wanted to get me another gym bag. And she thought,
well,
it was
that is embarrassing.
And yeah. Well, but it was just these lovely, fun, weird text messages.
And what I remember is literally laughing before I read your answer, knowing it was going to be funny, just laughing out loud. And here's my dear husband saying, what is going on here? Thankfully, I'm a very happily married person.
And I'm not. And I'm trying to infiltrate this marriage and be a stepfather to these children.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I mean, you would say things. Then I said, would you just let me be funny for 1 second without trying to top it, for God's sake? Remember that?
And, but I think you, I would you, always you give you due credit. That. Ha, ha.
No. It took a long time. I think you wrote, you're playing with the big boys now, didn't you write that?
Did I write that?
Yeah, something. Oh, no. These are the big, whatever it was. I thought, oh.
You might not know this, but after you landed and you were texting back and forth, I got a text from Seth Reese saying, you're never going to believe who I sat next to on my flight home. And I thought, said who? I thought maybe someone from another show. I had no idea, but he wrote Ann Dowd, and I wrote, that is perfect. And he said, and now we're texting.
Yes.
And I was like, that is perfect.
You know what's funny?
What made you say that?
Because you're exactly the type of person that he not only wants to be friends with, but ultimately deeply respects, because you are so committed to what you do and you're so good at it.
Yeah. And actually, Sarah said, that's perfect. I told Seth Meyers, and he was like, that is perfect.
They must have really been feeling sorry for you, honey.
Oh,
concerned for your well-being.
Everyone here who and feels sorry for me, and everyone listening to this podcast right now certainly feels sorry for me. And that's fine.
I'll try to look after him. Try not to worry.
But what was really cool was when you were nominated for an Emmy this year.
Yes. That was so lovely.
I sent you a text that saying, last year we didn't know each other, and now we know each other very well.
You said it much better than this long, drawn-out thing.
Yeah, and I said, I'm so happy that this year I get to send you a text congratulating you.
Oh, that's very nice.
And you know what was lovely? There's no one I'd rather hear it from, but also I was in Australia, so the announcements came at 1:30 in the morning, and so I would be asleep, presumably. And I had a very early call the next morning. I think it was 4:45 or something. And I said, you're going to bed, and you're going to be an adult, and you're going to sleep, and you're not going to obsess. And I woke up a few times, but I really woke up, and it was your lovely text.
That's nice of you.
Now at 2:20, and I thought, that is just so kind of you.
I have one question for you.
What is it?
Currently, you have read receipts on your text messages. Do you know that you have them on, or do you...
What does that mean?
It means when I send you a text message, and you read it, it shows up as read. So it'll say, I sent it, so it says read. So I know when you're reading text messages. Do you know that you have that feature currently on?
No.
Do you want people to know that?
No.
I think we can take it off.
Would you take
it?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
Let's do that before you leave.
But you've
that's
had that,
really
you've
nice
had that
you.
For a while.
I didn't even know.
All these people texting you are knowing that you have read their text message and you're not responding.
Actually, the worst person for this to happen to is Seth Reese, because if you don't text him back to something, he will automatically think the worst.
Oh, I've had experience there. We had a great big fight, which I'm so thrilled about.
We did have a fight, and we called each other, and it was lovely.
You're skipping the horrible part. Okay. I was so mad at him, I thought, I'm going to strangle that man. And so instead of that, I just said, I'm not talking to him. And so we didn't talk for a while, and then suddenly I was like, oh, I miss him now. Took a few days. It took a week.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, he's my real friend. Okay. Really, I was very happy about it.
I was happy about it, too.
And I was in... It's not TJ Maxx in
Australia, it's TK Maxx. It took a bit of investigation to find that out.
And I think
and that's where I was when I called him. Remember, sweetheart?
I do remember. And it was a lovely phone call. And I think on that note,
I think that is a perfect way to end this.
Well, did you tell them what we're going to do?
I wrote a pilot about an unlikely friendship between a 34-year-old man and a
32-year-old woman.
and hopefully, God, by God, we can get it off the ground.
Hopefully. That'd be great.
It's so good. It's so beautifully written. Yeah, it's a shock, really.
That's where we should end it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Anne. Thank you, honey.
I love you, Anne.
Oh, no. My favorite is I hug you. Never say it again.
I hug you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.